Thank you, Brother Holt, for that song selection this evening. Thank you for being in our worship assembly. We appreciate your interest in things that God has told us in His book. No better place to be than in an assembly with God's people. We appreciate the encouragement that we get from your being with us this evening. As we look at our announced subject, Lot's family from the Old Testament, example of a family who lived a long time ago. Sometimes we don't see the results of the decisions that we make in life, good or bad, for several years later, long time later. And it's really easy for us a lot of times to look at the lives of other people and see, well, they shouldn't have done that. That was a problem for them. It's a whole lot easier to look at somebody else and say, well, they shouldn't have done all these things. That's why they're suffering like they are. It's easier to do that than it is for us to look in the mirror at ourselves and say, I need to be careful. I need to correct something. But students of the Bible can look at Lot's family and learn great lessons from it. And really, that's one of the purposes that we have in the Old Testament scriptures, to be able to look at them and carefully consider the examples that are laid out for us in God's book. That's a great benefit to you and I, isn't it? Lot's choice on where to live was really motivated by what the physical thing for him, the physical improvements for him, for his animals, for his flocks and his herds, rather than what was spiritually best for him. People today are making the same kind of trade-offs, I think, trading what is spiritually good for what is material good. And Jesus has, of course, informed us that the material things are temporary, and they're not something that you and I can take confidence in, that we put our faith in those things and look to material things for our strength and security. God has always taught His people, you look to me for security and for strength. So, this was the case with Lot. And sometimes people don't see the bitter end and the tragedy of the choices they make until it's too late. And sometimes you and I, as people trying to make it through this life and raise families and associate with people, you and I don't see the bitter end of a lot of activities of this life, until many of our family members fall away from the faith, or many of our children and our grandchildren don't come to Christ for the forgiveness of their sins and the hope of heaven from the beginning. Simply refraining ourselves from wickedness and making sure that I always do the right thing in a certain situation as parents or as grandparents is not really enough. And that's what we see in Lot's family. We need to equip our children to live godly lives. They're not always going to be with us. And they're going to be in a position, wherever they are in life, that they're going to have to make their own decisions. And they're going to have to be responsible for their own souls, regardless of the environment they find themselves in. Lot was an individual who never really partook of the sins of his neighbors. In fact, it sickened him to see the way that they acted. We'll look at a passage in just a minute. But that really wasn't enough for his family. So as we consider the example of Lot in passages like Luke 13, we will see that Lot chose to be where he went. Abraham offered him a very gracious offer, a very gracious choice. In Genesis 13, 6 through 9, you read that the land could not sustain both of them. They had such massive herds with massive livestock that Abraham made Lot a generous offer in view of the fact that the herdsmen of Lot and the herdsmen of Abraham were at each other's throats because of the great abundance and being together like this. So Abraham said, basically, if you choose to go to the left hand, I'll go to the right. If you choose to go to the right hand, I'll go to the left. you make your choice and I'll go the other place, and let's eliminate this strife between the herdsmen because we're brothers. The whole land is before you, so separate from me and make your choice. I'm paraphrasing, of course, in Genesis 13, 6 through 9. We read after that in verses 10 through 13 that Lot chose all the valley of the Jordan. He looked over the landscape, decided what would be best for him, and we're told that Lot chose for himself the valley of the Jordan, and Lot journeyed eastward, and thus they separated from each other. So Abraham settled in the land of Canaan, while Lot settled in the cities of the valley and moved his tents as far as Sodom, we're told. In the very next verse, the break away from the subject of what was going on between Abraham and Lot to interject this most important feature. In verse 13 of Genesis 13, now the men of Sodom were wicked exceedingly and sinners against the Lord. The Bible does not accuse Lot specifically of greed prompting his decision. And he may have been a man just looking for a situation to better himself. But he viewed the land as being luscious and prosperous, more than likely with an eye of how can I sustain my wealth and how I can increase my wealth, and this ought to be the decision to help me do that. Doesn't success a lot of times breed the desire for continued success in life? And Lot was very successful in what he did. Notice that Lot settled in the cities of the valley and moved his tent as far as Sodom in verse 12. Was it a good choice? He probably thought at the time that it was. But you will notice from our study tonight that really didn't turn out too well. He would eventually find out about what Moses wrote in verse 13 if we accept the statement that he may not have known anything about the people of Sodom. But he would learn very quickly. Notice how the men of Sodom were wicked exceedingly and sinners against the Lord in verse 13. Big sins always start with little compromises. A little compromise here, a little compromise there, and before you know it, the ball's rolling and you're in deep, deep trouble. That seems to be what happened with Lot. A father fails his family when he allows little sins to remain, little compromises. Here, there, here, and there. And the result for his family is it will end up blowing up in his face. Why did Lot really choose Sodom? There's nothing recorded in God's book to indicate that when Abraham made him this generous offer, that he said, well, let me first take it to the Lord. And I'll get back to you. You know, and you and I think, as Bible students can understand, that's a tragic mistake. Many times we read of the spiritual success of people who followed God when they said, wait a minute, I need to take it to the Lord. I need to see what the Lord wants me to do. I need to pray to the Lord and find out where He wants me to be. And maybe He'll show me the way in the right direction and help me to make this kind of choice. We don't see that in the record, do we? What we do see is that he failed to properly consider the past. There's a striking resemblance, I think, between what happened in the days of Noah and what happened in the days of Lot. In Genesis 6, 5 and 6, the Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great on the earth, and that every intent of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. As a result of that, the Lord was sorry that he made man. Those ought to be some of the saddest words in the Bible for us. The Lord was sorry that he had made man on the earth, and he was grieved in his heart. Luke 17, 28, 29, it was the same that happened in the days of Lot. They were eating, they were drinking, they were buying, they were selling, they were planting. they were building. But on the day that Lot went out of Sodom, it rained fire and brimstone from heaven and destroyed them all. That's a horrible thing to read about in the record of God. In 2 Peter, chapter 2, verses 5 through 9, Peter writes about this, and he says that God didn't spare the ancient world, but preserved Noah, a preacher of righteousness, with seven others when he brought a flood on the world of the ungodly. And if he condemned the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah to destruction by reducing them to ashes, having made them an example to those who would live ungodly lives thereafter. You know, there are a lot of people in our world today that say, that example in the Bible, that doesn't teach us that homosexuality is wrong in our present society. How do you escape that example? Especially when an inspired writer references that example and said that's exactly what it's for. Example of those who would live ungodly lives thereafter. There it is, plain as day. And if he rescued righteous Lot, oppressed by the sensual conduct of unprincipled men, for by what he saw and heard, that righteous man, while living among them, felt his righteous soul tormented day after day by their lawless deeds, then the Lord knows how to rescue the godly from temptation and keep the unrighteousness under punishment for the day of judgment. What Peter wrote seems to indicate that Lot must have known God's attitude toward Sodom. I'm sure that he did after he arrived there. The question is, did he really know before he arrived there? Notice that Peter refers to the lifestyle of Lot as a righteous Lot. And so, I have to agree that God viewed Lot as a righteous man. But he had some failures. He failed to look to the past, particularly comparing the situation with that of Noah. And he failed to look to the future also. He didn't consider the end of the matter with all of its possible consequences. We have a passage in the New Testament that teaches us to walk circumspectly, to walk with our eyes open. That means we foresee the consequences of the decisions we make about what we say and what we do in life. It's evident that Lot didn't do that. He didn't consider the influences that evil might have on his family members. He may have been viewing himself, well, I'm strong enough, I'll be faithful to God, and I'll conduct my business with these people, but what they do will not affect me. Well, that may have been true in his case, but what about the case of his wife? And what about the case of his children? Did they have that same resolve and that same commitment to God? We're warned in the New Testament, in 1 Corinthians 15, verse 33, to not be deceived. Bad company corrupts good morals. A lot of us try to live as if that's not true. And that would be a bad mistake. Brethren move away and take jobs in places where there are no Christians. There's not a place to meet with other Christians and worship God. Would that be the wisest thing to do? Try to raise a family by yourself without the encouragement of other Christians just because you can have a good job? It'd be something to think about, wouldn't it? In a similar fashion, one can't drink from the waters of religious error and not be affected. One cannot feed his mind on the garbage of the world without consequences. One can't go where Satan is and try to live and have a good time without being influenced. You sit down with dogs, you rise up with fleas, is the old time saying that illustrates that point. Maybe Lot placed material prosperity above and before spiritual prosperity. Maybe he did. That's possible. Matthew 16, verse 26, Jesus said, what's going to profit you? If you gain the whole world, is that going to profit you spiritually and eternally? If you gain your whole world, everything, but lose your soul, what have you got? If you gain your soul, you're better, much better off. What will a man give in exchange for his soul? Maybe this was Lot's gravest error. What if you gain the whole world? What if your offer of a great job with great benefits and good education, attractive marriage partner, what if good offers in life come to you, but it leads you away from Christ when you make those choices? Would it be a good choice? In God's estimation, it really would. Let's think about some of the tragic results of Lot's choice. In the first place, he lived surrounded by ungodliness. We're told in the record that the men of Sodom were wicked exceedingly and sinners against the Lord. I'd really hate for that to be an accurate description of me. What about you? Would you hate it if God's book described you that way? That's about the worst you can be described by God, isn't it? In Genesis 18, beginning in verse 20, the Lord said, "The outcry of Sodom and Gomorrah is indeed great, and their sin is exceedingly grave." He's not saying that their sin is the usual kind of sin that everybody does, and it's not good. You know, he doesn't use that mild language. He said their sin is exceedingly grave. You know, they're on the downhill slide, and they're about to hit rock bottom. He says, "I'll go down now and see if they've done entirely according to its outcry which come to me, and if not, I will know." Then he said, Abraham, may the Lord not be angry, and I'll speak this once. Suppose 10 righteous are found there." And Abraham knew Lot was there. He said, "I will not destroy it on account of 10. In Genesis 19, the visitors called to Lot. The townspeople called to Lot. Lot had visitors in his house, angels that came from God, going down to investigate. And the people called to Lot and said to him, "Where are the men who have come to you tonight? Bring them out to us that we may have relations with them." But Lot went out in the doorway, shut the door behind him, said, "Please, my brothers, do not act wickedly." You know, some people have said all this is just an account of bad manners. That's all it is. Inhospitable. They were inhospitable, and they were displaying bad manners. That was the only fault that they had. Do you think that's true? Do you think they would be described in such language as that if that was the only thing they were interested in? The only thing they did? "Do not act wickedly. We are about to destroy this place because the outcry of it," in verse 13 of Genesis 19, the visitor said, "We're about to destroy this place because their outcry has become so great before the Lord that the Lord has sent us to destroy it." So right here, we see that these passages show us that Lot was surrounded by ungodliness. And if Lot was, his family was, his wife and his children. We also might note God's attitude toward the Sodomite. In Leviticus 18, verse 22, "You shall not lie with a male as one lies with a female. It is an abomination." The Lord said that. It is an abomination. He didn't say it's an abomination under the Old Testament, but when the New Testament gets here, free love is for everybody, and we're going to erase some of the things that are abomination and wickedness before God now and make them holy and just. No indication of that anywhere in God's record. Leviticus 20 and verse 13, "If there is a man who lies with a male as those who lie with a woman, both of them have committed a detestable act. They shall surely be put to death. Their blood guiltiness is upon them." That's pretty severe language, isn't it? Even in the New Testament, God is describing people who don't honor Him as God and are not thankful. In Romans 1, beginning verse 26, He says, "God gave them over to degrading passions. For the women exchanged the natural function of that which is for that which is unnatural." And in the same way, men abandoned the natural function of the woman and burned in their desire one toward another, men with men committing indecent acts and receiving in their own persons the due penalty of their error. 1 Corinthians 6, 9 through 10, or do you not know that the unrighteous will not inherit the kingdom of God? Do not be deceived. Neither fornicators, nor idolaters, nor adulterers, nor effeminate, nor homosexuals, nor thieves, nor the covetous, nor drunkards, nor revilers, nor swindlers will inherit the kingdom of God. Now, that's pretty plain language, isn't it? For you and I to understand how God feels about sodomites, about homosexuality, about the activities that were going on in Sodom and the cities associated with it at the time that Lot lived there. We live at a time when sodomy is publicly glorified in this nation. We have people that are actually parading in the streets, supporting and glorifying and trying to get everyone to compliment them when they are doing exactly what God said is an abomination and exactly what God said will prevent them from having heaven. You know, when I was a younger person, the state of Tennessee had laws on the books against the things that are being paraded around in the streets now. They were called crimes against nature. And there were people convicted of those crimes who went to jail for those crimes. What changed? What made it different? Now, pulpits across this country are inviting openly homosexual people and advocates of these things to fill the pulpits and preach, God is love and He accepts you the way you are. It's ridiculous. Sodom was not a place that claimed only a few homosexuals. When they came to Lot's house seeking his visitors, the record says, the men of the city, the men of Sodom, surrounded the house, both young and old. Both young and old. All the people from every quarter in Genesis, in the Genesis account. It's strange, isn't it? Don't you think? We further notice that even guests passing through the city, travelers, unknown by these people, they don't know who the travelers are. They're strangers. They're not saying, stay here and let's get to know each other and then maybe if things work out, our children can become married and have families of their own. That's not what they're saying. To strangers, open strangers that they don't know. They're saying, we want to have sexual relations with you. Bring them out here and let us do that. Do you find that strange? Strange behavior for people? And as a result of it, those type of activities, Lot was tormented daily. In Peter's record, he rescued unrighteous Lot, oppressed by the sensual conduct of unprincipled men. For by what he saw and heard, that righteous man while living among them felt his righteous soul tormented day after day by their lawless deeds. I'd hate to live in a place where my soul was tormented day after day by the unrighteous deeds of the people around me. Wouldn't you? It's kind of tough to live in this world in certain circumstances anyway. But to have your soul tormented day after day by the unrighteous deeds of all the people around you, that's harsh. That's a terrible way to live, isn't it? Would you want to deliberately choose that? One has to wonder, why in the world did Lot not get out? What had such a strong hold on Lot and his family that when it came time to leave, the angels literally had to grab them by the hand and drag them out of the city to get them to leave? What was it that had such a strong hold on Lot and his family that they had to do that in Genesis 19, 15 through 16? That's horrible to think about the fact that he's tormented daily like this. And as a result, he lost his children. Lot's daughters were engaged to or had married godless men, people of the community. His daughters had no regard for God's standards in righteousness, at least not to the extent that Lot did. In Genesis 19, their actions in the mountain cave clearly show Sodom's influence upon them. They made their aged father drink so much alcohol that he could not remember what he had done during the night. It takes a pretty good bit of alcohol to get a person in that kind of situation, and they made him do it. So they're somewhat unprincipled, aren't they? They made him drink so much that he would lose his memory as to what they did to him. And they were agreed in their plan of incest, which would result in their selfish ends. And God warns us about disrespecting one's parents throughout the pages of the Old Testament. Why didn't they show their father more respect? Why were they subject to the fears of their situation? You know, it's a sad picture to see children this way, one's children this way. When you lose your children to the world, you lose one of the greatest treasures you could possibly have in this life. We've mentioned this passage a lot lately, but I want to mention it again. In Psalm 127 and verse 3, children are a gift of the Lord. The fruit of the womb is a reward. Lot's greatest treasure wasn't found in his flocks and his herds and his tents. Lot's greatest treasure was his family and his children. It's sad when parents lose their children to death. That's a sad thing. It's very sad to cry with parents in the funeral home because they've lost their children prematurely through some accident or through some disease. That's a hard thing to do. But what's infinitely harder than that is when they're lost to the God of this world. That's harder. The love for Sodom was not easily removed from their lives. Once one learns the ways of the world and becomes familiar with the ways of the world, it's very difficult to have them unlearn those ways. Parents have a serious responsibility to provide for their children's spiritual needs. It appears that Lot was somewhat unsuccessful at this. Some people have done everything for their children. They said, "I've done everything for my children." Well, in some of those situations, a lot of them, you haven't done everything for your children because you didn't train them. You didn't teach them. You didn't bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord in a lot of cases. He need not have lost his children. He could have brought them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord, but the details about how and why he failed in that are not recorded for us. Did he do everything that he could do to help them make the right decisions in life? He ended up losing his children and he lost his wife also. When the angels came, they said, "Escape for your life. Do not look behind you and do not stay anywhere in the valley. Escape to the mountains or you will be swept away." But his wife from behind him looked back and she became a pillar of salt. Something most of us as Bible students are familiar with. Jesus talked about his coming in judgment, and he said when he was telling them to follow his instructions, to be prepared and to be ready, in Luke 17 in verse 32, he said, "Remember Lot's wife." He used her as an example. Looking back cost her life and cost her soul. Why did she look back? Was it because she left her heart there? It could very well have been. Who was responsible for the loss of family? You know, each family member, I think, has to share in a certain amount of guilt. But how Lot must have regretted his initial decision to move closer and closer to these evil people. First, he pitched his tent toward Sodom. Next thing you know, he's sitting at the city gate. Next thing you know, he has a house in town. Why did he do that? Why did he make that progression? He lost every material thing that he had. He went in full, but he came out empty. Lot went up from Zoar, stayed in the mountains, and his two daughters with him, for he was afraid to stay in Zoar, and he stayed in a cave, he and his two daughters. Where were all his flocks and his herds and his tents? They were consumed by the punishment of God. Now he's a poverty-stricken old man living in a cave with two immoral daughters. But you know what they didn't run out of? They didn't run out of alcohol, did they? You know, probably the last thing in life a lot of people in our day, as well as Lot's day, would give up is that pack of cigarettes and that bottle of whiskey and everything that promotes that kind of lifestyle. Last thing a lot of people would give up. A lot of people dying from emphysema. The thing they want most is to smoke a cigarette. That's a horrible, tragic story when people get to that point. Lot was saved from the horrible destruction of this valley, but at a terrible cost. Peter said when he rescued righteous Lot, he was oppressed by the sensual conduct of these men, what he saw and what he heard. Living among them, he felt his righteous soul tormented day after day by their lawless deeds. The Lord knows how to rescue the godly from temptation and to keep the unrighteous under punishment for the day of judgment. Lot was a person who was saved. God showed him grace. God recognized this person is righteous. He made a lot of mistakes. It cost him dearly, but this person is righteous, and there's something there that can be fanned into a bigger, brighter flame. And God said, I'm going to preserve him. You know, there's a really fierce battle being waged today between right and wrong. It's being waged on a national scale in our nation. We're in an election year. We have politicians that are running for office. We're investigating and looking at their lives and wondering, where are the statesmen? Where are the people of integrity? Where are they that can lead our government in the right direction? And it seems like we can't find any people like that. Our nation is facing a big battle between right and wrong. Our families are facing the battle between right and wrong. The church is facing a battle between right and wrong. Each of us as individuals face battles between right and wrong. The battle went poorly in Sodom and Gomorrah in Lot's day. Jude 7 says this, just as Sodom and Gomorrah and the cities around them, since they in the same way as these indulged in gross immorality and went after strange flesh, are exhibited as an example in undergoing the punishment of eternal fire. It's interesting to me that the Lord said about the sins of the city of Sodom. It's interesting to me that he not only said that those things are sinful and you should not do them, but it's interesting to me that to put an exclamation point on that, he provided an example of heaven's unleashing horrific destruction against those people because of their lifestyle. When fire and brimstone rained down from heaven against them. And then if that were not enough, to have that in the record of God forever, when the New Testament writers came along and displaying the new covenant to people, God continued to say, remember Sodom and Gomorrah and what it means. Remember what it stands as an example for. And don't live that way. That's an exclamation point on what God has said, I think, don't you? Lot's terrible sin should make us realize that just being a believer is not enough. Christians can fall into sins that are just as bad as those committed by unbelievers. Just being a believer is not enough. Lot was a believer, but he failed miserably with God, and he failed miserably with his family. We need to be prepared to go the second mile. We need to be prepared to teach others as we have responsibility, opportunity to do, especially our children, especially our family. Thanks for listening to me. It's a powerful lesson from the pages of God's book. If you're in our assembly tonight and we can help you in a spiritual way to walk closer to God when you leave than when you first came in, we'd be delighted to do that if we can help you. If you want to become a Christian tonight, any way we can help strengthen you in your walk, your fight against Satan, and your walk to love God in your life and try to encourage any as many others as you possibly can. We delight in that opportunity. You would respond to the invitation of Christ while together we stand and sing the invitation song.